Hey, everybody. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Danny Tripodi, and I'm joined by my wonderful co-hosts, Andrew Buckman, Brandon Barba. And we are the Upside. You are listening to Happy Questing. We had some things happen this weekend, boys. You want to talk about it?
Yeah. There was an awesome 2K tournament located in Solvay, New York that we hosted as the Upside, and it was an incredible event. I think the players had a great time. We had a great time. Very exciting weekend for us.
Yeah, it was awesome. It was awesome to see it. It sucked to not play. None of us played, but it was so much fun. Everyone that I talked to had positive responses out of it, had a good time. The crowd stayed to watch the finals for a while. So it was, overall, it was a really great event, especially when we were kind of going into it blind and hoping for the best. I definitely tossed and turned for that last hour before I woke up, but I will say, it's amazing how tired you get watching people play cards all day. I was exhausted.
That's so true. Honestly, like after I was like at the last round, I had to sit down and I'm like, well, I don't even feel like I did anything today, but I'm so exhausted just from like, I think it was more of the mental stress of like, nobody's going to show up to this thing or this is going to suck. And you know, it was awesome though. It was cool to see people come from all over. You know, we had people from Albany, Utica, Rochester, Buffalo, Binghamton. So really cool to see all of central upstate New York.
Yeah, it's upstate.
Yeah, I would call it anything. Real upstate. Real upstate. We consider Binghamton downstate.
Yeah.
If you're listening from New York City, you probably are like, yeah, Hicks.
What? Hicks. but yeah, we had 30 players participate, and we gave away $2,000 worth of prize support in Reign of Jafar, probably a little bit more too.
Well, with all the extra stuff, yeah, the giveaways that we did, which was really cool to see, like not everyone walking away with something at the end of the day, but a lot of people.
Yeah.
I was talking to my son tonight, and he's like, if you finished in the top eight, you are guaranteed a box.
Yep.
And he's like, that's crazy. And then multiple people got Enchanteds, and they were wicked excited. We gave away the Jafar board game thing now. I can't think of what it's called.
Yeah, the Palace Heist.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. A trove.
Yeah.
Countless deck boxes.
It was a great time. Oh, the new, the official stuff.
Yep, the official deck box and lore book from Ultra Pro. You know, it was a great time. One of the biggest takeaways, I was talking to some of the players that were out in the Albany region, and they said, you know, honestly, you guys inspired us to do something out near us. And I was like, hell yeah, you guys do it. Like, we'll definitely come out and play. Like, the more players that can do this, I think the more it could help the thriving community of players like us that want to play in these competitive events, you know? They were also like, wait, so the Upside isn't a store? I was like, no, yeah, it's just this is just a team. We just like the game, and we want to see it thrive. You know, in the dry spell of zero DLCs, zero news about anything, you know, I think it's up to the players to keep these competitive style events going, you know?
No, and we brought this up often on the broadcast because there were at times the, you know, set champ winners on stream.
Yeah.
And so we got to talk about how we had local representation included in our tournament to kind of showcase that the catchphrase. Brandon, did you coin the for the players, by the players?
And one of us did. You may have. I think I heard Danny say it at one point, but yeah.
You know, someone said that phrase, and, you know, I think it kind of rang true in that, like, we had these players coming to show up to represent these stores, but it was all about, like, the Lorcana community and not just our local community community, but really expanding outwards to Albany and Buffalo and everything in between to really showcase some awesome Lorcana New York talent. But also, even if you don't want to say your talent for whatever reason, we had some really good skilled players. So no one doubt yourself, even with your results this past weekend. But that, like, it's just a fun game to play, and you want to get together for an event like this.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's when I look back to, like, the for the player, by the player, one of the problems we've always seen in the community, it's not a problem, one of the obstacles to overcome is the store has got to make money or they're gone, right? So we respect that, you honor that, but it makes it hard to get everyone together, and a store to put up that much prize support, it's a lot for them. They have to have a huge turn, and some of the stores just don't have the space, and we were lucky enough to have access to an amazing space in Salve that's, you know, we can easily double the number of people we were there. But by being able to bring all those stores together and work, and again, Dame Games, Unplugged, Tabletop Gaming, Misfit Games, and Storytellers, they were great partners. And you know, we often forget to mention that Retro Game Con chipped in to help us out a little bit too. It's a great event in October. But yeah, it was awesome to see these people come in. And a lot of the people we see, and it was easier to start to put names, faces with names, and the feedback in the community was awesome. They just, as we talked to people afterwards, some of the things, we'll probably talk about the format later, but that had heard some really interesting comments that, you know, I agreed with, and it was like, to me, it helped address some of the stuff we were doing. The location again at the Tyrol Club, a lot of people were positive. We got to have some food, so we kind of had a lunch break. We probably want to get to the winner at some point, mentioning how well he did. But anything else? Just your instant feedbacks?
Yeah, no, I just wanted to build off of what you said, too, about our sponsors. You know, Tabletop Gaming, Dame Games, Unplugged Gaming, Storyteller, CNY, and Misfits, as well as Retro Game Con. Without them, this event couldn't have happened. But I think them all coming together to work and help support us with this event, like, really definitely lightened the load of their donations, of whether it be prize support or money, to help us put on this event. You know, instead of having one store have to give up $2,000 worth of prize support,
especially when it's hard to get the product.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was one of the things jumping way at is like, what are we going to see in this fall? Like, no one, or August, whenever it comes out, like, everyone's starting to get nervous about that. Like, we have no idea, because there's I don't know. But it makes it hard. It makes it nervous. 2 weeks after launch, I mean, I think we were sweating right up until the last minute, you know, or what are we going to have? Even though we had it, we knew it.
Right.
Am I going to forget it?
Right. Otherwise, we would have had to have been shipping out some boxes of Jafar, I guess. But no, it all worked out, and it was awesome. So, yeah, do you guys want to talk a little bit about some of the deck lists that made top eight?
So, you're looking at it. So let's say, give us a meta breakdown of the top eight. What were the, is there a common, at least color combination? Because I don't feel like there was a lot of.
So I actually did break it down, and it was pretty diverse. We had overall 2 Ruby Amethyst decks, 2 Ruby Sapphire decks, 2 Amethyst Emerald decks, and then an Amber Steel and an Emerald Steel. It's a pretty good spread. It wasn't all Ruby Amethyst. It wasn't all Ruby Sapphire. And the cool thing that I wanted to talk about with the Ruby Amethyst decks, both of them were not your traditional Old Faithful Ruby Amethyst. They were both very, very different, which I think is a good segue into that top eight deck. This is Mike from Binghamton's Ruby Amethyst Burn. And I'll show it to you guys, but we'll put it on the screen for our listeners on Spotify or Apple Music, wherever you get your podcasts. We'll try to be as descriptive as possible. But so if you're looking at this screen here, or this list, it is a crazy list played by an expert, crazed person. I love Mike. He is like the Chubby of Binghamton. We have Josh Chubbs on our team, and I've deemed him the mad scientist, because he can take some crazy unique strategies that you would never think of and put them together, and then all of a sudden you gotta wait, this is a pretty good list. So Mike piloted this Ruby Amethyst Burn list to top eight, and I love it. He doesn't have the Radagon. We did see his list before in the Dame Game set champs, where he was playing Little Radagon from set 7. I think he's a 4-drop, and he kind of acts like Maui, but he needs to be exerted to get the gain 1 lore. The main strategy of the deck is to get out your Maui Half Sharks and play your actions to gain lore, like Gathering Wisdom and Knowledge, or This Is My Family, A Pirate's Life. For A Pirate's Life with a Maui Shark out? Oh, That's fantastic. Your opponent loses 2 lore. You gain 3 lore. Maybe you have a second Maui shark out. You gain 4 lore. You're so much closer to winning the game. And then also a card that worked really well for Mike. I had talked to him during the tournament. He was raving about They Never Come Back from the latest set from Jafar. And that is just... you play it for 3 and up to 2 chosen characters can't ready at the start of their next turn. Then you draw a card. Such a good card in this deck because it's delaying your opponent. And then on top of that, you're drawing a card. You might gain a lore off of the Maui Half Shark. Phenomenal deck.
You essentially get an Elsa
for
3 ink in a turn. And you get to draw a card off. Obviously, you don't have the body of Elsa plus the quest for 3 afterwards, but... what I'm looking at this list is I see a very like tight focus on what you're trying to do in these 2 colors that isn't necessarily, as you mentioned, Danny, like the traditional version. This is about I'm going to gain lore really quickly and use that Amethyst package to also be able to like draw a bunch of cards. Interestingly enough, he doesn't have the castle in this list. I feel like that like is a staple and would somehow contribute to this, but he clearly like really focused on the action package with Maui Half Shark. So makes sense not to include a non-action. You just want those characters and as many actions to gain lore or do the thing, draw the card, wipe the board, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Really interesting note for Mike also is that I'm pretty sure he said he was playing on 3 hours sleep because you Magic fans out there, Final Fantasy coming out, he said he was up late at a Final Fantasy release thing the night before.
I love that.
Yeah, and that was after he had qualified for the top 8. He was pumped and he was like, and I did this on no sleep.
Yeah, that is great.
Well, an interesting choice too with the rabbit as opposed to the genie. So, and we see this like often, you know, which choice are you going to make for the draw? A lot of times we see the rabbit when you have a little bit more bounce, so with like snake included, but there's no snake in this list, so
yeah, it's just fox. And you know what, I think I prefer the rabbit in this because my opponent has so much destruction. If you kill a genie, that's terrible, but if you kill the rabbit, I'm getting an extra card, you know what I mean? And I think that's what, like, Mike's like, sure, go ahead, I'm gonna draw 2 cards now instead of just play genie, draw a card, then it dies and go, oh, dang it, you know? So moving on to 7th place, we have Chris's Emerald Amethyst, and this is Emerald Amethyst discard. It looks pretty similar to the Emerald Amethyst discard that I was running last set. He does have the additional pull the lever, wrong lever, as well as the new chip. What is it? Quick Thinker. So when you play this character, chosen opponent chooses and discards a card, and then also he's a 3/2 body, which is nice for a 4 cost.
And being participating in deck checks, everyone who had Emerald had that card in it.
Really?
Yeah, it was everyone. And then I think every round we checked, we happened to pull an Emerald deck.
Yeah.
Always there.
And I bet it was at different counts too. You probably saw a range. It wasn't always 4.
Yeah.
Because a lot of lists are running, I've seen in many cases, just 1, which I'm always skeptical of 1 card in your deck. Unless it's something that's like really tuned to do something, I feel like you could probably, if you're running only 3 copies or 2 copies of another card, really benefit from switching that out. You know, a lot of players have been running with that single copy, and it kind of diversifies in this deck archetype another way to discard. So if you get, you know, the Pete played on you where now you can't play actions, no worries. I'm still going to force you to discard because I have a character that does it for me. And unlike the other character that we saw in the past, the Lucifer, that was an uninkable, cost 5. This costs 4 and is inkable. And I think that's really important.
Absolutely. I do have to note, though, so with the release of Pull the Lever, Wrong Lever, we have seen a disappearance of Hypnotize, which Ben, who we will be getting to his list shortly, he was talking to me after the fact, and he said, honestly, this tournament, I really missed Hypnotize. Being able to just play it for 3, discard a card, draw a card, was such an oversight. I don't think he said oversight, but like it was something that he sorely missed in his build.
And it may be gone anyways in a couple of months.
Yeah, that's true. This was the other Ben from Binghamton, Memento Mori, who I believe Ben Schmidt was his last name.
Yep.
He played Amethyst Emerald as well, and it looks fairly similar to the list that we had just seen. It looks like his actions might be a little different, and it looks like no chip. And it looks like Chris was off. No, he wasn't playing any genie, whereas Ben is playing three copies of the genie. So it's interesting to see some of these. Also, interesting enough, in Chris's list, he wasn't playing any Fox, which I found very interesting. He said, I don't need to bounce cards. Whereas in Ben's list, he was at three Foxes. I think, and it's something that I was like, originally, like, you need four copies of Fox. It's the best to my last list. I played two copies of Fox and I was like, okay, I don't really need to rely on Fox. To now, I could almost see not playing Fox, but I do like the bounce ability to be able to surprise my opponent and be like, all right, I'm going to attack you with something, pay three Fox, bounce back my guy, finish off the job or trade with Fox. I think that's still a good play as long as we have Fox, because that's another potential card on the chopping block of set rotations.
You know, I really haven't played this color combo yet. I did throw it together, I think, last set as an idea, but never actually played through it. Interesting to hear your not dislike for the Fox, but like where it's not as necessary.
Yeah.
Whereas I think, and maybe it's just again this color combo, but the Fox is so important right now for a lot of things. And it, like a little foreshadow for the winner of this tournament, uses with a different color combo, but uses the Fox as like I think a very important tool once you have that like 6 to 9 ink or mark, so that way you can really like take advantage of multiple cards in a turn where playing something and then bouncing it back to your hand with that Fox. So I see a lot of utility in it, maybe not so much in this color combo.
Then moving on here, we got our other Ben Ramos. He was playing his Emerald Steel Classic, and it looks like he did remove the Beyond the Horizon, which I was talking to Andrew about on stream. We had met, I think, Monday before the tournament, and he was kind of talking to me about it. He's like, you know, I played it at Encounter down in Pennsylvania, and he just didn't like the play style for him. It didn't fit the way he wanted to play the deck. And I was like, dude, if that's the case, like just take it out. Like play something else that vibes with your play style. You know, you don't have to play these cards just because the meta says, oh, you should be playing this, you know. And it worked out for him. You know, I don't think he missed Beyond the Horizon. It's still a good card. Don't get me wrong. It's just if it doesn't fit your play style, don't play it. It looks like he also did have the one of chip, the new chip from set 8, which is cool to see. He's still rocking the Space Pirate Pete, but also he mentioned to me that Tinkerbell was clutch for him all weekend. Being able to shift or just hard play Tink and come down, put down a damage on everything really helped him.
It's such a great card.
Yeah.
And it's like anytime you have a deck with steel, it's like you want to find the reason to have it in there. It's just sometimes it easily gets pushed out because it does have that. But even if you're running one or two, that's a one-off thing in there where you get it late in the game and you can really hurt someone's board or put that, you know, unsuspecting play on it. And then if it takes someone out, it just, you know, that's when it even becomes more powerful. It's a great card. I had a discussion with someone this weekend about how, like, we really want to see that reprinted. That like that needs to come back. It's awesome. And not to mention the artwork's awesome.
Right.
And you know,
I think we got it. It's is reprinted. Yep, because it's in the gift set that's coming out, or the collector set, and it has the 9 set number on it, which means it's an official.
That's good to know.
Yeah.
I think until they're the official thing, I'm like, I don't trust anything.
Right. That's the safe way to play it too. So moving on into our top four, we've got Luke Campbell, and he was piloting his Ruby Sapphire Popsicle Control, are we calling it? I've just been calling it Control, honestly, now with Hurum Band. But it still plays the pop. It looks, if I'm not mistaken, I believe it's the DKP list. Some of the ratios might be a little different. It's just fours across. Oh, except for he split with Big Sisu and Hades, which is, I think that is a smart play there. You know, Hades we saw this weekend was so versatile. People in the Sapphire matchups, it was Blurple versus
Ruby Sapphire,
and it was Hades. Whoever had the last Hades won, really. But it's cool to see Luke has, he was one of the newer-ish players, I think, coming in around set five with his brother, Bailey. And he's had a lot of success with Ruby Sapphire, so I was really happy to see him play so high, get top four. I was definitely cheering for him. It's just one of those things where I think he kind of fell short in the end, couldn't find his removal when he needed to.
Well, and what's interesting about this deck is there's nothing new about it. The newest card in the set is, or in this deck, is from set seven, which is the Tamatoa.
Oh, you're
so
right.
You don't really get a lot of the new stuff featured here, but that just tells you it's like not always needed to do well. We kind of saw a little bit of this last set with, as soon as we had the ban with Hiram and Fortisphere, people had to like resort to what they knew, and so you went back to like previous decks. So clearly this deck can still get you some wins without any set eight spice in it.
Yeah. And then in top three, we've got our own upsider. We got Matt Ulrich piloting the Amber Steel aggro. And this is a great list. I was looking at it and I was like, wow. So I've been playing Amber Steel aggro at tabletop on Wednesdays, and I've gone back-to-back winning both weeks with it. And he's doing stuff a little bit different than I would. And some of it is like, oh, maybe I should play that instead. For example, I mean, he's on Larry, which I've been wanting to play. But also the new Bolt is, I think I slept on this new Bolt. He enters Exerted, but he quests for four, which is insane. And he's got zero attack, but four health. So he's got a little bit of some tank to him. And if he is sitting behind Pluto, it's like, what are you going to do? This guy's going to quest for four next turn. If you don't have a way to ping damage to him or remove him straight up, like, I'm going to get that four lore.
Yeah, Matt was telling me about that line. Was he'd have his Pluto out, and then he would play the Bolt. And it's like, okay, you have to do something to this Pluto. And Pluto being like a 5/5 when he's not damaged.
Yeah.
Really tough to, you know, deal with there. So it's a great. And then if you choose to put damage on it, you always run the risk of your opponent then being able to play Rapunzel and healing it. So
exactly.
Well, the other side, even with that, like, that Bolt's a good setup. So, like, even if you don't have Pluto out there, you can set someone up, say, hey, you're going to take your guy, take him out. You're going to exert someone maybe you didn't want to, because it is a four. It forces you to make a play or waste a big card on it, where you can kind of force them into you and then turn the tide on something, when you know, in there. And then if they can't get them, hey, four lore in one turn is pretty sweet.
Yeah, it's nothing to scoff at. So yeah, that was Matt Ulrich's
and early game really hard. Like third turn, yeah, he comes in exerted. If you get him out even without a bodyguard, he's not an easy card to take out on turn three if you went first.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's definitely, especially with this deck now, where you have the chances of going Rhino turn one, shift two to the big Rhino, then on three you have Bolt. Rhino's going to take out whatever you exert to try to take out Bolt, like, regardless. And then maybe you follow it up with a Calhoun, you know, after on turn four with something else. It's,
you go traditional Steel Song where you get down Cindy, and then you follow it up with Piglet, and then you throw down that Bolt. I mean, you're getting some big lore early on, and you can drop a Storm or something on him.
Absolutely. So it's no surprise Matt came in third. Was really cheering for him, but happy to see that he placed out of the four upsiders that participated in our 2K. So in the top two, we have Nicholas Pitarelli from Binghamton, and he was running Ruby Sapphire Control, And it looks kind of similar to Bailey's list. It looks like instead he was prioritizing Sisu, the big Sisu at three, and only playing one Hades. I think other than that, I think he might have had the Vitalisphere, yeah. It looks like, in place of a Pirate's Life. So it's interesting to see the two difference. Oh, you know what? No. Yeah, Luke was also playing McDuck Manor. I think McDuck Manor is so crucial in this list especially. And we saw it all day, too. There were many times where either Luke or Nicholas would just drop down, not one, not two, but three McDuck Manors. And it's like, what do you do with that? Your opponent's going to gain six lore at the start of their turn, and it's got nine health.
It's one of the cards I'm looking forward to going away, be honest.
Really?
Yeah, I don't ever play really with that. I mean, I have when I've played with a little bit with Sapphire, but it's such a powerful card because it changes the game. You put that down and you have to stop.
Yeah.
When he played Anthony, he put it down and Anthony had to stop. He wasted two of his characters, I think, that were going to quest to take it out. He was able to take it out, but it changed that about a control move where you controlled what they had to do to be able to force it out, and
it shifts the tempo of the game.
Yeah.
You know, when you stop your opponent from questing, that slows down everything, and then you can kind of take control, which is exactly what the deck wants to do.
Well, and we got to see Nicholas play this deck twice on stream, yeah. So really get to see versus different decks what type of play lines he's looking for. But this happened in his finals match, actually, where you could see, thankfully, to the, you know, the stream could see his hand, and we could see the setup. He was really looking for this, I'm going to clear the board with B prep, and then potentially be able to sing that, actually, with Sisu, too. So be able to sing, be prepared, and follow that up with three McDuck Manors in his hand. Like, he was waiting for that play line, and that would have clutched the game at that point. I'm pretty sure he was in that, like, 10 to 14 lore range, so that's two turns instantly right there. So the fact that, like, this deck is all built to set you up for this kind of play, and we watched him, like, when it didn't go his way, that's okay. He, like, reset the board to try to look for that same play line because that was his out.
Yeah.
And I will say, for those of you that are new to games like this in general, collectible card games, I was talking to Nick afterwards, and he's like, "Yeah, I this is my first game I started playing 2 years ago." He's like, "I never played a game before."
Really?
Because I was, the comment I had made was, I was telling my son how you lost to some people that are really experienced. You know, you're young. You it's hard.
Yeah.
Anthony's last two games were against the two people in the finals. And he's like, oh, I just started playing two games. I've never played a game before. This is it. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, he really picked it up. And it shows you don't have to be great and played 10 years of Magic or something, right. Yu-Gi-Oh! Or whatever you did. And you can jump in and start playing. I mean, that's where I'm at. But, like, that was really interesting to hear. Because he was good. And
yeah.
He is good.
Yeah, no, that's rare to see at such a competitive level, too. You know, that I feel like most of these people, of the big competitors, have come from other card games, whether it be Magic, Yu-Gi-Oh, Pokemon, Digimon, Bandai, any of the Bandai cards, Bushiroad. You know, there's so many card games over the past just 25 years. So at some point or time, most of these people, I would assume, had played one of those card games in their life, you know? I feel like a majority being Magic. Magic is usually, it is the root of all card games. So that's interesting to hear, though, that Nick is only, this was his first card game and he picked it up so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So that's cool.
Because when you transfer to the guy he lost to in the final.
Yes.
Who's a former, like, world number one in Yu-Gi-Oh.
Not number one, but number eight.
Eight.
His trophy
came. His brother likes to brag about him as
eighth
one, I think.
Place. There was a misprint on his trophy. So yeah, let's talk about my boy. One of my second or third mentors in card games, Ivan Anamaria. He taught me a lot of what goes into being good at card games. And, you know, this is something that you see just in his play style. And I said it all weekend. Ivan will wait for you to make a misplay, and then from there, but like a brick wall, if something is exposed to it, you can chip away at that, and then that brick wall doesn't stand up a chance to continue to stand. And this deck is insane.
It's spicy. I think it has a 60-something percent 70%
spicy meter on Ink Dex. And he took full advantage. The elephant in the room that I want to talk about is he doesn't have a be prepared. Not a single be prepared.
And can I? I don't want to take the floor for a moment here because there was a couple months ago where I was claiming I don't think we need be prep in this deck. I mentioned this to Ivan in our interview afterwards, where just this color combo and the threat of be prepared forces your opponent to really think about any decision that they make once you get to seven ink. So this was a closed deck tournament. Obviously, once you know, cat's out of the bag, loses that kind of power. But he said that there were times where, like, you know, he'd go to exert the seven and people start clearing their board. He's like, oh, no, it's my Hades. It's my Hades that's coming out. Don't you worry.
And he probably enjoyed every second of that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's a mind game. And you know, Chubb and I talked about this while watching them play. Like, Ivan, his body language told a lot of what was happening. On the table, he's tapping. You can see things. He's rifling through his cards. He's thinking. Other times, when he's got nothing to worry about, he's sitting back in his chair, relaxed, you know, like, because he knows it doesn't matter what you do. He's got his whole line of play already set up.
Yeah, it's usually the crossed arm, sit back and just watch your opponent. And I feel like that's something very rare in Lorcana. That's something that I have been trying to do more, is I'm so worried about my own plays that I'm not watching my opponent and what they're doing, what their face looks like. It's such an important part of competitive card games, is to see what is going through your opponent's mind. And if you try to do that with Ivan, you're not going to get far. He has a great poker face. And that's where it stems from. You know, I think a lot of the players back in the day, they played poker. And that's something that, you know, if you're not a card game player in the sense of Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh, if you have an experience in not showing your true colors when maybe you drew something that wasn't so great, there's so many players sometimes where they'll go, oh, that's not what I wanted. And I do it too. You know, it's like, oh, that doesn't help. But if you can calm yourself, and especially in a bigger competition like this, and not give any telltale signs, I think that goes a long way.
That's my personal biggest concern that is always running through my head. Like, in league night in the week, I'm not as worried. But like, when something gets competitive or anything like that, I'm always like, my mindset is I want to do the same thing every time. I'm really bad at it. And if you, like, I can be like, oh, you just told them. And I think people don't watch it, but I know in my head. And I didn't play a ton of competitive poker. I played a little bit in college. We played a lot more of the house. And
yeah.
But like, learning those things and thinking about things. I mean, we kind of idolized the movie Rounders. I don't know if you guys have ever seen it. Great movie. I saw a clip from it today, but it actually talked about the tell with the Oreos with John Malkovich. And but like, you really, it's so important in watching your opponents. But I want to set my cards the same way. I want to go through the same. So if you watch me play now, like, you'll see me trying to do some of these things. So it's the 10,000 repetitions. So you always do it, so you're not giving it away. Mm-hmm. Because that is a huge advantage if someone's paying attention. And the higher up you get, you can put that stress in someone. Like, if you can't figure it out, like, you're waiting. Like you said, the thing about the Ruby, when you're playing Ruby, first thing you thought is, oh man, I gotta get everything before seven. Like, and then you're counting, and even if it's there or if it's not, you still always assume there's at least one in the deck.
Yeah.
Right? And even if you know Ivan's not playing it, you're still thinking it.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, it's a great mind game. I also, just analyzing the list, he doesn't care about the big Sisu, but he does have three of the smaller Sisu that quest for two and can kind of help with hand advantage. The one of Peter Pan, Shadow Finder, is really interesting. You know, he has the Maui Half Shark, which can benefit off of it. But other than that, you know, there's the Genie that could rush in if you want to, and the Elsa already has rush. So it's very interesting to see it. I think the Pan Shadow is more so like an add-in just for an additional rush if anything, if I had to guess.
I watched him do it with the genie in his matches. So that's what, he'd get that out. He would rush into something on the turn, take like one or two damage on it, usually with like something little, but then he'd play the genie and the genie would come out and he'd get to draw a card and then he would finish off something. And then he could bounce that genie back to his hand with his fox. It was a very, cadence of gameplay that he pulled out with this list, because he's not running fours of with these cards. It's three foxes. It's one Peter Pan. So
one goat, too.
One goat, yeah.
Very interesting. I enjoy that he went the Teeth and Ambition route with the Hades and the Bell. There's definitely a lot more damage manipulation, as well as that two drop Queen of Hearts, I think, is a fantastic choice in this list.
Like, yeah, it gets a plus three strength, I'm pretty sure, when it's damaged. And that was like a staple turn two move, it seemed. Like he was really making sure that every game he had a queen in hand. So turn two, that's coming down. And it is kind of like a threat because it will quest for lore. And then afterwards, you're staring that thing down and you're like, oh, it's my turn three. I guess I could put damage on. I can't really take it out, but then it's a 4/4. I don't know about. And so like all these choices start happening. So a really powerful card for him.
Definitely.
If you're not a really strong player playing someone like an Ivan, he's a good player, right? Like we talked about, he knows what he's going to do. He knows what every card does. He knows when he would use every card. But there's so many little unique tweaks, like you said. Like we just assume that everything's going to be four for the most part. You might have a couple twos in there. You see one Peter Pan, you're assuming there's at least one more, if not two more. I mean, just because of that rush piece of it, and it's got to be so off-putting, like going into it's like, you know, it's trying to match up on Shaq when he's like this giant monster, right? Like, I mean, there's so many things you can think of. Like, it's just, it's intimidating because you know going in, you don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah, it's a great bait and switch. If I saw Peter Pan, I'm like, okay, when's Iago coming out? Mm-hmm. Iago's never coming out. Same thing for... what was that? I was looking at one and I was like, oh man, the obvious be prepared, but also, Sisu. So he's got the three cost Sisu. And I'm like, if I'm playing against him, I'm thinking he's got the big Sisu mm-hmm. that he's going to shift on, you know, and he's not playing big Sisu at all. Same goes. It's interesting to see his breakdown of two Elsa, two Maui Hero to All, and two Lady Tremaine. No Madame Medusa, but I knew that Ivan's a big fan of Lady Tremaine, especially being able to play Lady Tremaine, shift on Tremaine, quest with her, and then bounce back both of them with Fox is just so much value. And then you get to play it again. It's disgusting.
Oh, and looking too, there are four Maui Half Sharks, but for actions, there are a total of 10. That's kind of like I see Maui Half Shark in the same realm of Steel Song, where there's probably like 18 to 20 songs that you want to make sure that you can hit. Perhaps there's a similar percentage with Maui, Half Shark to ensure that like late in the game, you're going to have access to those actions to gain lore. Ivan says, I only need 10 in my list to make that happen.
So, but think about that. Like, take away the lore piece of that card and the action piece of that card. How much does the card cost?
6.
How much? And it's a 7/5?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's a good card, right? If Absolutely. You take away that action part, the action part is like a bonus, is how he probably views it. It's still a good card that you're going to get out there. And whenever you see it, it's another card that makes you nervous, right? I mean, like, no matter what it is, you got to have something big to take it out. And no matter what you're putting into it, it's getting beat.
Yep.
I don't know. And the more you think about it and people are building your decks, sometimes we put cards in because it feels like it. We talked earlier with Hypnotize, or not Hypnotize, Beyond the Horizon. Was that it?
Yep.
It doesn't feel right. I don't want it. When you build your deck, every card, you have to know when you're going to use it. What are you going to use it for? You're not putting it in because the meta says you put it in. You're putting it in because I know what I would do in this situation with it. If it gives me that extra kicker, that's better. But it doesn't need that. Like the action, to me, I would be willing to bet he would still play that card without the action kicker.
Absolutely.
Well, and two, there's like no Pirates life here. And so I feel like with Maui Hashtrick, we just said before, wow, isn't it great when you earn three lore on your turn for a card and your opponent loses two? And Ivan says in this list, nah, you don't need it.
Yeah.
And it goes back to what you said about him earlier again. He looks for the mistake and then takes advantage of it. Every single card he plays would takes an advantage of someone making a mistake. You're dumping this now because it's going to do this, or you screwed up and you put this card down and now Tremaine's going to kill you, you know, do whatever. Yeah. But you really take advantage of that. And there was a couple of things when I was not with Ivan, we were watching earlier when I think it was the first match, Josh Chubbs was out there. And we're like, the only thing he can do is like a couple things here. We're like, oh man, he got Giant Mickey out, right? Like, that's awesome. And then it was like, boom, Hades. And it was like demoralizing his part. And I talked to him later. He said he knew it was kind of done by then, anyways. It was a last ditch effort. But like, sometimes you've got that answer and someone makes a mistake. And his mistake was he had nothing else out to do anything with.
Yeah.
In that situation.
It's funny that you mentioned that too, because going back to the be prepared, I play differently knowing that my opponent is going to, if they're playing Ruby Amethyst, going to turn seven that they're going to ink, I might not play an extra card because I fear the be prepared.
I got beat so many times by being like rushed to get all my cards out.
Yeah.
That's what I thought.
And in
did.
This scenario, that's awesome for Ivan because then he's going to laugh and play Lady Tremaine and get rid of your one card that's on the board, you know, or something along those lines. It's definitely a big mind game playing this Ruby Amethyst build. And it's something that you can't, there's no way to tell until you see it.
Well, and here's the question, though. And Ivan says in the interview, we'll watch a little bit later, but he talks about like he can't wait to see what the community reaction is to his deck list. And I think it's like one of those things where, okay, the cat's out of the bag, right? We know you don't have it in this list, but can you be certain that your opponent is running the version without this? And so it just plays into these mind games, or like maybe like we've talked about how maybe there are some pro players that like to seed something into the meta to kind of force something. So when they go to a tournament, they can play the counter to that.
Yep.
Maybe Ivan's kind of like big branding now, get everyone off the be prepared. And then he's coming back and I got four baby and four big Sisus. Yeah. Watch out.
And that's the response to the meta, right? Like being able to be nimble and know what else is out there and in those opportunities and getting out. You know, one of the reasons we wanted this event is because we don't get to see things like this, right? We're all at the stores. We go to our set championships, and especially with no DLCs, we're not playing against other people. So we needed to be able to play against these other people and create an opportunity for people to play and to see something like this. And get away from that meta, but it's cool. I mean, upstate New York, I mean, getting away from the cards and going back to where upstate New York was represented by all the big cities and Utica. And sorry. And we were able to have an event where we saw a lot of, I mean, the Emeralds, you saw different things from every deck out there. And it was cool, a good event overall for that.
Definitely. Yeah, no, that was a great spread out of 30 different decks. There were a lot of great players there too. You know, unfortunately, not everybody can make the top eight, but I just want to thank again everybody who came out to support us and participate in our first ever big tournament like that. That was awesome, and I hope that they continue to do that if we decide to do more of that in the future, alongside our sponsors, you know, as well at Unplugged, Tabletop, Dame Games, Storytellers, and Misfits. You know, we couldn't have done it without them, so we want to thank them as well.
Thank them, and hopefully we showed our community that, like, this is possible. We proved that we can do it, and I am hoping we definitely get to do this again in the future.
Absolutely. So should we take a look at
before we jump to Ivan and to look a little, I think we need to spend a couple minutes because we've been talking for a while here, talking about the format and what our responses were. A lot of people hadn't played Best of Two before. And like reactions you guys heard from people who played it, because we definitely knew there was some people who were like, this isn't not a big fan of it, and what your thoughts were, and then things you heard before we jump into.
Yeah, I ask Ivan about it, what his thoughts are on the format, and he brings up something interesting, which I think actually played out to be true, which is with the two game format, it reduces the scheming in to get for the top eight, right? Because now it could be the case, depending on what your opponents do, if they get that additional point over you, that knocks you out of top eight. So I think we saw, and I don't know, I wasn't out there, but how many people ended up splitting?
Not many.
There was one official split.
Yeah.
And that was for the top two.
Yep.
And it was Ben and Ivan.
Yep.
There was one, I don't think, know if it was official. I would say it was closer to an unofficial split. They definitely kind of played into it in there. But I think it struggled for them. And touching on that, that was, in doing best of two, that's what I wanted.
Yeah, right? It made it competitive. Like, you had to play the game.
The other piece that was there that is really important, we had 30 players that played five rounds, no one dropped. And you, because almost everyone thought I had a chance. Some people kept playing because, you know, maybe the ride was there. But usually when you get down to round five, you know it's between 12 people, and a lot of people will just say, I'm done. No one did because everyone thought they had a chance. And that was cool. I mean, we saw two upsiders go from top eight down into like 14th spot because they didn't do as well in that last round. And that was the number one comment. And someone specifically, I asked, what'd you think of the format, not do it? And they said, I've never played it. I didn't know. And it was cool to see after every round the board moved. And I think Perry mentioned it to me yesterday. No one was sitting in that top chair. It was like you were all over the room because your table changed. And it was, that's exciting to me. That's like, that's what it should be, right? You should be playing more people. You shouldn't be locking it up. Winning the first game wasn't as important, I don't think, because, you know, when you go to best of three, winning that first game, you got to get up there, and then you start going, and then you know I can just ID, right? You might get lucky matchups, and I've done that and made something where I probably shouldn't have made it. But this didn't allow that. Like, you lost the first one, you could come back. That bonus point, just like you said, it really changed things. And the last big tournament we were at, the top four was locked up after three rounds. And five round, same number of people, right? This one, really the top two was locked up after four rounds, and that was it.
Yeah.
And to be honest, it was because those guys are really good, but there was, after two rounds, only one person was 2-0 without a loss, and then they lost in the third round. So that's cool.
Yeah.
I could go on and on. I really love the format.
Absolutely. It's the Danny DeVito meme from, I think it's Always Sunny. He zooms in on his face and he's like, I get it. that was me during the tournament. I was like, oh my god, I get it. I get why Ravensburger wanted the DLCs to be best of two. It all makes sense now.
Well, and you still get to the best of three. It's not like the whole time you're only doing two. It's like very much to get to the best players in the room. That's what we're looking for. Who showed up on the day with, you can still talk about your pathway to get there, and maybe you had a little bit easier of a pathway ultimately, but still it's like, okay, who showed up to play today? And for going 2-0 in a best of three is not the same reward as in best of two to really show like, even on the draw, my opponent, I was able to beat them.
Yeah.
One of our upsiders was in like seventh place, I think. Mm-hmm. I think they were seventh or sixth place. I think it was seventh place and split. And I was like, that should be good enough to get in. He ended up in 13th, I think. Mm. And like, it's crazy. Like, I honestly thought, like, in another format, split, you know, getting like that would have been there, and it would have been cool to be able to do that. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we want competitiveness. You want to get to the best. And the other piece I thought with the best of two was it flew. Like, sometimes those best of three matches, and you get some of those ramp ones, and they go on forever, and we're good. There wasn't as many going to turns. We didn't have that often. I think two or three times it happened, and I want to say only one word actually wasn't resolved. Yeah. But like it just moved along.
Yeah,
it really moved along, and it was like 12 o'clock. We were almost like, I don't even. It was quick.
It was crazy. Yeah, and we had a 30-minute meal break too. I thought the best of two format was really beneficial, not only for efficiency, but also just being able to fit in that meal break. And I, like you said, I think had we done best of three, we might have seen more players drop, honestly, because of the fatigue of adding that additional game every single round. That really adds up. Mm-hmm. Shall we get into this post-win interview with Ivan and Andrew?
Do we get to make fun of Andrew?
Sure, why not?
We've got Ivan, the winner of the first Team Upside 2K event. First question I got for you, Ivan, is how do you feel?
Relieved.
Relieved, okay.
Yeah, these games, you're just thinking through your turns, your plays, your outs, what's he got, what's I got. Like, you're doing a lot of mental gymnastics. Mm-hmm. Once you get to 20 lore, though, okay, the day is done.
Yeah, relief.
I can relax now. Yeah, I know, the brain's powering down right now. but honestly, just kind of reflecting back, it was a fun day, good time. A lot of the competitors are really tough. They really know their stuff. But the hosts especially stood out to me today just because they were very welcoming and the venue is beautiful. Like, it's a very relaxed environment. So for as much Lorcana that was played today, very relaxed environment. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, shout out again to the Tyrol Club. They've been great hosts for us in the past for kind of our side events that we've done, but hopefully today was enough to justify another one of these in the near future, so we're really appreciative of all of the support they've provided us. Speaking of the long day, if we kind of think back to the Swiss stage, though, Ivan, you were pretty much undefeated all of Swiss until you had one opponent who took a game off of you, right?
Shout out to Mike.
Yeah, Mike.
Shout out to Mike.
One of the Team Upside members. So we might not have won our own tournament, but we took a game off the champion, so we'll take it.
He hit me hard. I'll never forget that game because I was turn four. I had one card in my hand. He played Chip. One of the new cards from set 8 to discard my last card. I didn't stand a chance.
Yeah.
Luckily, game 2, I was able to fight back. And in a 2-game format, that just means we have a draw, we shake our hands, and we'll see you later. Mm-hmm. So, like, definitely a great competition today. I was fortunate enough to take a lot of the wins. 2-game format is tough. But if you get that 2-0, you get that bonus point, and that adds up in the end.
Mm-hmm. So, and just quickly on the 2-game format, like, as a player, you know, what is your preference? Do you tend to like the 3-game format more because you get that third match to really seal the deal if you're 1-1? Or does it kind of like feel better to get that 2-0 and that extra point?
I am a fan of 3-game format just because I feel like there's a finality to it. Like, we know who the winner was from our match. 2-game format is great, honestly, when it comes to time. Mm-hmm. And also basic structure of the deck, the tournament. You're not so mathy in the last couple of rounds. You know, you have those people that are like, all right, what are your tiebreakers? What if we draw and do this? You know, and no one, you know, likes that feeling of being mathed out of top 8.
Yeah.
2-game format really opens it up to, like, you know, you gotta play because 1 second you're second place, but if you lose and those people right behind you played it out and they got a 2-0, now they got 7 points and they pulled ahead of you. And I'm sure that happened to a few folks today, but for my own personal preferences, I love 3-game format just because I know either you won or I won, no doubts about it. But 2-game format has its advantages.
Yeah, and I get, as the player too, like, I remember at the DLCs, being there for those 2 games and going 1-1, and you're like, oh, I know, if I just had that 3rd game, I feel like I could beat my opponent, but you never know, and so you leave that, it feels unresolved in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and it's tough to get a 2-0 against a good opponent, because that means that not only did you win on the draw, but you won on the play as well. Like, and it, you know, it basically takes it so that if you win the die roll, now 3-game format, I'm going 2nd game 1. If I win game 2, great, but game 3, when it's the deciding factor, I know I'm going 2nd.
Yeah.
So 2-game format really makes it more even, but again, everyone's got their preference.
Yep, for sure. Well, enough of the 2-game format and Swiss, because you got out of there with flying colors and made it into the top cut. Talk to me about what it felt like kind of going through those few players, because at the top 8, we had, I think, some really good players make it, so you were fighting all the way to the end.
Yeah, it's never easy. I will say, though, once we went to top 8 and it became a 3-game format, again, going first is an advantage, but being the 1 seed, getting that choice felt good. I know that recently it has been changed to, you know, go back to die roll, which I think is a bit more fair in the long run. But having, it's kind of like you earned it. Mm-hmm. So like, why not give you at least some sort of advantage, I guess. I got to see a lot of different decks played out, and to see green purple discard. Oh boy, that's a tough matchup. Yeah. Then you have amber steel, which my opponent didn't draw very well, and I had the cards to anti his strategy. But like, that deck is very consistent. I expect big things from that. And then in the finals, one of the most consistent decks of any format, red blue. I'm fortunate enough to kind of know that matchup and know when mm-hmm. to kind of apply that pressure. And the secret's out. I didn't run any Be Prepared in my deck today. I didn't tell anyone because, you know, once you find out that your opponent's not playing any Be Prepared, you're like, oh, I guess I'll go wide.
Yep.
But yeah, that was my semi-secret. I can't wait till my deck list gets published. People are going to shake their heads
at me. And I'm really excited for this, Ivan, because, and you don't know me very well, but I've heard a lot about you through Danny, right? I've been someone who said for some time, I don't know if you always need B prep in this deck. I mean, maybe in previous sets it was a requirement, but it's been something that I've said before, like, is it necessary when your opponent doesn't know? Because even the threat of seeing the colored combo, of the idea of it being there, obviously once the cat's out of the bag, different story, but maybe that played to your advantage today.
Yeah, when I turn seven sideways, people are already moving their characters I'm like, ho, ho, ho.
It's a Hades.
Yeah. Turn seven Hades, which was honestly very clutch today. Hades drawing two cards, not just on the play, but also on the quest, crazy. If you hit it on something that's in a library, if you hit it on a Diablo, you're suddenly doing a two card, sometimes four card, five card swing, which then that's, again, the whole point of Be Prepared is to even the field, the playing field. Hades does it in a similar way where it now doesn't even the playing field per se, but now I have the advantage and get to decide the tempo and pace mm-hmm. of the game. So that was my strategy, is holding tempo and control.
Yeah, and well, let's stick with your deck for a second too, because I think you had some other really cool options in there that got played, like the new queen, that when you get damage on her, she gets buffed. And you also played that with Teeth and Ambitions. That's a card we haven't seen a lot of players. And I didn't look at your list yet, but as soon as I saw that queen come out, I was like, Teeth and Ambitions has got to be in there, because it's going to feed into this. So,
playtesting, I found out that I was actually quite weak to the Steel-Amber matchup, just because Cinderella plus the new cards like Rhino.
Yep, the Deviled Hamster.
They stick to the board really, really well. But Queen survives Let It Go. Queen tends to survive Strength of a Raging Fire. And if I can let Queen live, which is really all her purpose is, Teeth and Ambitions, boom, you got yourself a 4-2 beat stick, and I just cleared out your Cinderella. Now I have not only do I have a 4-2 beat stick with 2 damage on it, but I can always transfer that damage if I wanted to the Rhino, and all of a sudden that resist on that Rhino doesn't matter as much.
Yeah, and so that's a great part of resist is like, yeah, it prevents the damage, but we've seen now in Ruby Amethyst this ability of manipulation of the damage counters around the board that can get around that. My second to last question, the penultimate one before we end this interview is, during game 2, there was a mistake that happened, and the stream caught it with the fox, where you were more than happy to just banish your fox against that super goof. So my question is, and we talked about this in the stream, that like, even great players can make mistakes. It's a long day, you don't think those things, where, you know, what can you attribute to that? Is that just like, it's been a long day? Or, you know, it's okay to make mistakes, and you just gotta make sure you're paying attention to those things.
I have a strong belief that it's not okay to make mistakes.
Okay.
Never make mistakes. If you make a mistake and you do it live on stream, then what's the point?
Sure, okay. Yeah,
I feel nothing but shame, and I apologize to the Lorcana community. And it'll never happen again, hopefully.
And that means a lot.
I was respecting the super goof, the super part of super.
There we go.
He's just so strong. He had a cape and everything. No.
Well, and it didn't matter anyways, I think, with what we determined anyways, that your opponent probably, but it changes the decisions, and who knows. And we know, I never like to leave on a, like, oh, well, who knows what could have happened.
Yeah, there's always the what ifs. You know, what if I played this differently? What if I played this in a different order? Which, honestly, going back, I'm going to look at my own plays and kind of re-examine it, because that's kind of the goal, right? You're always re-examining your own plays and saying, like, I wonder if I could have played that better, because I'm already replaying a bunch of plays that I did today where I was like, I probably could have squeezed in another lore here or there, or a better play, or calculated the odds of this. But that's kind of the fun part of Lorcana. You're always playing with your friends, playing with people online, and figuring it out together. Because the more you figure out, the more consistent you can be, the more consistent you'll be, the more, you know, prepared you are.
Definitely. And it shows today. There was one move, I forget which game and match it was where you played it, but I think you had like 7 or 8 ink, and you were able to clear your opponent's board by like precisely.
Yeah, taking, I remember
like,
that.
Like you
one.
Were mathing it all out. We were watching, like what he's thinking through the play line. Because you make one mistake and it's
like
not going
to
work.
Go Hades, and then I had a Bell in hand and a Teeth and Ambitions. Yep. And I had to clear his Maui, clear his Shark, and clear his. The location, Manor.
Yeah, McDuck Manor.
I was like, okay, how do I get rid of all of this? I know the math is there. And ultimately, Hades attacking instead of questing was what gave me the extra damage to transfer with Bell, which then I could sing, which then Goat takes this. You know, it worked out in the end.
Okay, yeah, so it all worked out. So my final question, I'll let you get out of here, it's been a long day, is you've just made it into the next 2K tournament that's being offered, right? You keep just winning all these things, Ivan, and you can't stop playing. What are you excited about as we head into the future of Lorcana? And I'll preface that by adding, you know, with set 9 comes rotation, so it's kind of like this reset of the state of the game. We have our first Worlds, which is actually the same weekend as the next tournament that you're probably playing in. So I guess, what are you looking forward to with what's to come with Lorcana?
I love my team's creativity. We're always cooking something up. I love being the chef and cooking all kinds of random stuff up. So with rotation comes a whole new set of problems, you know. Like, all right, so how do I replace Rapunzel in an Amber deck? How do I replace a whole new world? How do I still get the lore? Bounce package isn't a thing anymore. How do I draw? So like, it's a lot of experimentation, and that's where the fun of the TCG comes in, is that ability to mix it up. And with more cards, you're like, oh my gosh, Big Mickey. All right, he's coming out, he's clearing the board. Like, so you're, all these different puzzles that you gotta figure out. I look forward to cooking, basically.
Cooking. Well, after watching the chef's kiss that came today, I'm sure you're cooking up some great options there in the future. Well, Ivan, thank you so much for sticking around to chat with us after a long day. Once again, congratulations on being the first Upside Event 2K winner. You want to show off your trophy to the stream here? This was made by one of our members, Dylan. He's a fantastic artist. So it's the Lorcana symbol, but we also use it as ours. So the upside down, we're the upside. So there we go. Congrats on the win today, Ivan, and best of luck in all of your future matches.
Super impressive. Like, yeah. If you're thinking about getting involved in the game, or you're thinking, how do I get better at the game? There's your recipe. Going back to the little chef thing there, but like, he touches on going back and watching myself to see what I did and review my mistakes. You can see him at one point when you were talking about the clearing the board and trying to figure it out, and the Hades attacking and stuff. You can see him visualizing the board and being able to see that board. And I mean, some people are lucky to be able to watch or to be able to think 3, 4, 5 turns ahead, remember exactly what their opponent's doing, things I struggle with. But he just he does give that recipe. I mean, it's work. It's like any other competitive thing you do. You have to put the time in. He's lucky to have people to help him. But man, that was impressive. Like, It makes him sound like a professional. Like, he was, right?
Yeah.
Kind of is Lorcana's kind of going down that road. But I think we will see him at big championships as you go.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think Ivan has always been competitive as long as I've known him. And it goes back to when I was 13 or 14 years old. So he's always had that gift of being able to see plays three, four, five turns out, and also being able to visualize and recall, oh, I should have done this better, I should have done that. And, you know, that was before we were filming stuff, you know. It's true. That stuff really helps, being able to go back and be like, well, I should have played this different. You know, I think that's something that not a lot of players, at least around our area, are doing yet. But it's something that can only help you become a better player.
It's not just the I should have, or it could be should I have.
Yeah.
Right. So like really questioning, was this the right thing, and running through that, you know, that analysis of 100 different times. What was the right way to do it?
Absolutely.
Did you enjoy watching yourself?
Yeah.
It's like the third or fourth time I've watched it.
Really?
So, oh, Mr. Narcissist over here.
No, because I'm very critical of myself. So I was trying to like think of ways to improve. And I thought the interview was the best thing I did all day. So,
well, yeah. I was going to say,
it was fantastic.
At the very end, it was like, that was an impressive thing. And I'm saying to myself, is he going to bring it in with, I hadn't watched it yet. And is he going to bring it in with the congratulations? And he liked the professional thing. Like, he brought it all back together, closed that off perfectly, and then brought and gave Dylan a shout out. So that was awesome.
Yeah.
So shout out to you.
Thank you.
But again, you want to be good at your craft. You want to get better. What do? You go back and review. So yeah,
watch the tape.
Yeah. Watch the tape and do that. And that was impressive.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, guys, we've been recording for a minute here, so I think we should send it off, right?
Yeah. It was a long weekend. We're starting the week off, looking forward to a lot of things to come, so more Lurkana down the road.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that was a great end to a weekend. Happy belated Father's Day to all you out there. Go get your kids some packs. Not me, though. I'm not buying any more packs.
Got to wait for set 9 at this point. You're like, yeah. All right, I'm on to the next thing.
Hey, my Father's Day packs. I got 4. I pulled, besides 3 Alice's and 3 something else, the common one. We did get a giant Mickey, so that was cool.
Nice.
Yeah, my daughter opens it and doesn't know anything. She's like, oh, it's all junk. I'm like, there's a legendary Mickey in here. What's wrong with it?
That's funny. All right, folks. Thank you, if you've made it this far, for listening to us talk. We truly appreciate each and every one of you who listens to this podcast. And remember, happy questing.
Happy questing. Have a great one, guys.